Welcome to the December 2nd meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I would ask folks that have electronic devices to please silence them, and that includes legislators. Also, point out that we have emergency exits, regular exits in case of a fire, to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. I wonder if folks would please stand with me while we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Ms. Robertson? Mr. Shinagawa is asked to be excused. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has also asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
10 members present, 11 members present.
We're having trouble counting tonight like I did last time.
10 members present.
Thank you. We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We have two proclamations tonight. I'm going to read a part of one to celebrate the Village of Groton Fire Department's 150th anniversary, and we will be carrying this over to the Village of Groton on Friday and read the whole thing over there for that group. We're proud of them. But I just wanted to read, whereas the Village of Groton was formed in 1860 in response to the devastation of fire in a purposeful desire to establish appropriate fire protection for its residents, and on December 6, 1864, a fire company was appointed in the village by the Village Board of Trustees, and the Groton Fire Department was therefore established. And I'll just drop to the resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature does hereby extend our deepest gratitude and recognition to the members of the Groton Fire Department on the auspicious milestone of 150 years of continuous dedicated service to the citizens of the village and town of Groton and the county of Tompkins. And I have signed it as of December 2nd, 2014. We have another proclamation tonight, and I'm going to be very pleased to read it because it talks about someone who's contributed a lot to our community over the years. This is a proclamation honoring retiring Multicultural Resource Center Director Audrey Cooper. Whereas over the years, the Tompkins County Legislature has recognized individuals in our community who are held in great esteem. And whereas such individuals who have been honored have shown outstanding leadership, courage against daunting odds, and an unwavering vision that is in keeping with the vision and principles embraced by the county. And whereas one such individual is Audrey Cooper, who assumed the reins of the director of the Multicultural Resource Center in 2000 and as the sole employee for many years, essentially became the MRC. And whereas the mission of MRC is to create dialogue around diversity issues, particularly racism in Tompkins County, and to facilitate community leadership on those issues by helping to empower people to embrace our community's ethnic and cultural diversity. And whereas under Audrey's guidance and management, both the MRC's image and the level of commitment and responsibility to the Tompkins County community in fulfilling its mission were elevated. And whereas Audrey addressed and developed plans and programs to fulfill MRC's goals, to advocate for disenfranchised and underrepresented communities, expand diversities within the community, agencies, and organizations, and promote cultural awareness for an inclusive environment in our community. And whereas Audrey developed, supported, and provided effective leadership for such notable programs as Talking Circles on Race and Racism, the First Peoples Festival, and the Sister Friends Luncheon, in addition to partnering with other organizations of the Martin Luther King Day on celebration, the MLK Community Build, and the Community Impact Reentry Program, among others. And whereas Audrey has selfishly helped dozens of organizations in Tompkins County.
Selflessly.
My apologies. We'll take that again. Whereas Audrey has selflessly helped dozens of organizations in Tompkins County and beyond, and only expects cultural competency change within the organization as her reward. And whereas Audrey has been a powerful educator about and advocate for multicultural services, emerging critical issues, and essential finding needs in developing a culture of inclusive inclusion and opportunities for all in Tompkins County. And whereas Audrey is known and respected for her leadership, passion for diversity and inclusion, and encouraging others to seek creative ways to develop service while maintaining efficiency, effectiveness, inclusion, and high standards of public service to the community. And whereas, despite her protest, Audrey has been recognized for her work with many awards, including the New York State Harriet Tubman Humanitarian Achievement Award and the Community Dispute Resolution Center Martin Luther King Jr. Peacemaker Award. And whereas Audrey is a lifelong resident of Tompkins County and over 35 years of advocacy experience, including 14 years of service with the Multicultural Resource Center. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim December 12, 2014, as Audrey Cooper Day in Tompkins County. And on behalf of the Tompkins County Legislature, extend our admiration, respect, and profound gratitude for Audrey and her extraordinary heart and achievements during years of selfless, important service in the Tompkins County community. And further encourage all citizens to recognize, on the occasion of her retirement, the many significant contributions Audrey has made to promote an end to oppression, protect the diversity of and inclusion for residents, and improve the cultural competency of the people of Tompkins County, all of which are crucial in making Tompkins County one of the greatest counties in the United States. And further extend best wishes for healthy and happy retirement to Audrey Cooper on this well-deserved occasion. And I've signed that as of today. Audrey, could you come up and may I give this to you, please?
I am really very embarrassed. Those of you who know me really well know that I don't like public accolades in any sense of the word. But I thank you all, and I thank you all for allowing me to do the work that I have been able to do because you've given us funding to continue to do that for the residents of the city and the county. And so I'm going to leave it at that note. Thank you so very much.
And things, I certainly agree with the words in the proclamation that say that things like this and people like Audrey make this one of the best counties in the world. I want to announce that we will have an executive session, a fairly short one, I've been promised, having to do with labor negotiations at the end of the meeting. We'll move next to privilege of the floor for the public. And if anyone wants to speak to us, this is their opportunity to do that on any subject. We ask that you fill out one of the blue cards that are in the back of the room. And each person is allowed 3 minutes. And we have the following rules. The rules are, when you sign the blue card, you say, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. We have a time clock on the to my left on the wall, which will count down at the end of the 3 minutes. There will be an audible signal. We'll ask if you haven't concluded by that time to please wrap up. First person I have to speak tonight is Pat Pryor, a former county legislator. Welcome back, Pat.
Good evening. I'm Pat Pryor. I'm from the town of Lansing. I'm a member of the County Human Rights Commission, and I've worked for the past several months with Leon Lawrence and Dave McNamara, also commissioners, to update the commission bylaws. Prior to my current term on the Human Rights Commission, I served on the commission from July 1994 to July of 2000. During that time, the commission operated under a charter. In fact, it's the charter that I believe you're working to revise right now, that it had one name for both the commission and the office. And I think the fact that the charter was worded the way it is part of what has led to some of the confusion that I've heard from people about both the function of the commission and the roles of the commissioners. When you have both the human right, the whole section of the charter was labeled Human Rights Office, and then under the Human Rights, it was labeled the Human Rights Commission. And then under the Human Rights Commission, there was both the office and the commission. Since the functions of the office were listed under the title of Human Rights Commission, the things that happened that are office functions were easy to confuse with the general functioning of the commission. Part of the reason I wanted to be explicit about that is because I've heard concern, for one thing, about the commission's role in investigations. During the time I was on the commission, and from what I have been told since then, commissioners have never been involved in investigations. We have, however, taken on a role of advocacy around issues, human rights issues, not around advocacy around a particular incident, because an incident, until it's been investigated and some kind of conclusion has been reached from that investigation, it would be wrong of us to take a position on an incident that hasn't been fully investigated. So what we did do is, as things would arise in the community or if there were issues that we knew needed attention, we would do advocacy, what I consider advocacy, around those issues. And that is exactly what we still intend to do as commissioners, even though the language has changed. We are trying to change the language to more clearly delineate the role of the office from the role of the commissioners. And I hope that if you have further questions about that during your discussion tonight, I'm sure Karen could help with answers to the questions, or I could talk about it more fully too. We also want to be clear that we have great respect and admiration. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. I have Talise Hampton.
Sorry, we have a meeting to go to.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Talise Hampton. I currently live and work in Tompkins County, and when I moved here a couple of years ago, I wanted to build roots in Ithaca. I applied to be a member, a commissioner on the Human Rights Commission, and I was excited to find myself amidst a passionate community of members ready to engage in positive change. Being a part of this commission has really helped me to feel connected to Ithaca and really enhance my experience here since I graduated college and since moving here from the Aurora area. We've been very active working with the Office of Human Rights and Director Karen Baer to rebuild the Human Rights Commission. Among many other events and things that we're planning, one such event you will find in your packets. Dave, can you just hold that up? Thank you. We're hosting an event next Wednesday, December 10th, called A Diversity of Perspectives, in which case we'll have five panelists, local activists, professors, community members from the Ithaca and surrounding areas who will have the opportunity to talk about Human Rights Day, which is on December 10th, and also explain some of their experiences with diversity and also engage community members. It's a free event that's open to the public, and we not only encourage you to attend, but encourage others to attend. We're looking to be a voice for a voice and an ear of the community and also help them to build positive relationships with government agencies. So hopefully you can come out and also be looking forward to other events that we have that are coming up. Our meetings are also available as a secretary of the commission. Our meetings are available to the public. They'll be going up on our website, which we have been working actively to make more robust and so that community members can see it, so that you can see what positive things that we're trying to do here.
Thank you. Dave McNamara.
I think we're going from shortest to tallest. Good evening. My name is Dave McNamara. I moved to Danby with my wife, Michelle, about 3.5 years ago in order to experience the vast and rich opportunities and the beautiful environment. And I have to give thanks to people like Audrey Cooper for making this the kind of place that people like me want to come to, because there is no doubt that Tompkins County is has a strong commitment to diversity, inclusion, and civil rights. However, like every other county and country, we still have abuses of power, exclusion, and discrimination that require attention of government bodies and the understanding and commitment of the larger community. Our bylaws are before you this evening, are designed to provide a foundation that encourage equity and discourage discrimination for everyone and every place in Tompkins County. Building on these bylaws, we want to initially address four basic goals. Talisa has alluded to two of those goals: improve communication involvement regarding our efforts on the commission, and two, to create awareness and understanding of the diversity and resources in our county. And I really urge you to look at the speakers we have coming next week. It's quite a group of people that you can put together. Goal number three is to support the vision and strategy of the Human Rights Office. Initially, we want to encourage involvement in the what would MLK say today poster contest that is open to every person in Tompkins County. Winners will be announced at the GAC breakfast on January 17, 2015, and honored at the Human Rights Banquet on April 10, 2015. More information can be found on the TompkinsCountyNewYork.gov/human rights website. The commission also wants to support the ongoing efforts of the Department of Justice and the Tompkins County Office of Human Rights to improve the relationships between the Ithaca Police and the community. Finally, we want to celebrate and honor those individuals and groups who advance the cause of human rights in our county, and there are many of those people. In this regard, we urge you to consider nominations and support for the Human Rights Banquet scheduled for Friday, April 10, 2015 at Ithaca High School. Mark your calendar and join us to recognize individuals and groups who create the environment that designates Tompkins County as that very special place alluded to in the writing before. So thank you for your time. I used to be dreading how many people would sign up for your talk on these nights when I was on the other end. And we appreciate your support for human rights in our county. I welcome your affirmative vote to support the bylaws that express a mission and a process for working together to ensure that Tompkins County is an exemplar, is a beacon for human rights. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Leon Lawrence.
My name is Leon Lawrence, and I'm the chair of the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission. First, I want to remind everybody, though, our meetings are on the fourth Monday of every month from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Borg Warner Room in the Tompkins County Public Library. I also want to thank the legislature for the establishment of the Tompkins County Office of Human Rights and its advisory board, the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission. The residents of Tompkins County are fortunate to have both the office and the commission working on their behalf for the greater good. You know, our global village, as we look around the world, is under tremendous stress due to many negative actions that divide us instead of bringing us together. Internationally, nationally, and locally, we all must constructively work together for positive change that contributes to making our global village a better place for all of us to live, learn, and work. Regarding the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission, for about the past 4 or 5 months, we have worked on the bylaws. Commissioners Pat Pryor and Dave McNamara and I together, we worked collaboratively to create bylaws that are a strong foundation for the commission structure. The task force met with Peter Stein and the Health and Human Services Committee, and we incorporated most of their recommendations, as well as we met with legislator Dooley Kiefer, and we included a few of her recommendations as well. And we would have met with others if we would have been requested to do so. We understand that there is a difference of opinion regarding a few of the specifics in the bylaws. We, however, are hopeful that today's meeting will result in the approval of the bylaws. The commission has exciting work to do in the coming weeks and days and months ahead, and we need that time to focus on our future. In closing, I want to publicly thank the current active commissioners for their dedication and hard work. And they are Joe Carsage, Talise Hampton, who's the secretary, Amos Malone, the treasurer, Dave McNamara, Pat Pryor, Isabel Ramos, Amy Scott, Jamila Simon, as well as Chantel Thomas, who was on leave teaching at Stanford University. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence, and thank you for all the efforts of your commission. Anna Kellis.
Good evening. I know that many of you who have been on the special committee for the Old Tompkins County Library have heard me speak before, but for those who haven't, I just want to reiterate some of the comments that have been made during the special interest committee. In response to the proposed sale of the Old Tompkins County Library, a petition has been crafted and circulated. This petition is in support of an adaptive reuse of the building rather than a demolition and complete redevelopment. Over 500 county residents have signed the petition to date, a neighborhood association has been formed, and residents have attended almost all of the special committee meetings for this project. Although there is support for projects such as that presented by DPI, most of the support comes from residents who do not live in the surrounding DeWitt neighborhood. An overwhelming number of the neighborhood residents would like to see minimal disturbance through demolition and development, an increase in housing that the neighborhood can support. By this, we're referring to the expected increase in traffic and parking needs, maximal conservation of the existing greenscape around the building, and maximal use of alternative energy technologies. many of the residents who are in support of the Stream Collaborative project would like to see increased housing available, but it is the recognition that we should look at housing that that particular neighborhood can support. Rarely do we have both a building with such tremendous potential and a highly qualified team ready to do an adaptive reuse. I would like to remind the committee of a similar such situation when the old DeWitt building came up for sale. At that time as well, there was controversy about the feasibility and success of an adaptive reuse of the DeWitt building from its original school use. We now see this mixed-use building as a strong cultural and economic fixture of downtown Ithaca. The local Stream team, including Franklin Builders, who specializes in adaptive reuse, and Tatum Engineering, is dedicated to creating a mixed-use development that preserves the existing foundation and framework, retains and enhances the green space, and maximizes the use of alternative energy technologies. I urge the legislature to heed the call from the community and strongly consider the Stream project for the old Tompkins County Library site. We cannot continue to consider buildings as disposable. Recycling them should be a priority far greater than even recycling newspapers and tin cans, which we currently do with tremendous success. We have a team ready, willing, and highly capable to recycle this building, and I stand with many when I say that we should give them this chance. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one other person to speak. Before I do that, I just ask if there's anyone else who wants to speak tonight, please do sign a blue card, and send it up to us. Nancy Metzger.
My name is Nancy Metzger, and I wasn't going to speak when I came in here, but I saw Martha sitting there, and I just wanted to give her a big shout-out and a thank you for working so hard. And I'm sure speaking for a lot of people, but I'm crying. I don't want to get emotional about stuff like this. I was. Anyway, thank you, Martha. I know you worked really hard, and we all appreciate you.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thanks very much. Before we move on to privilege of the floor for legislators, I want to stop and recognize something that's happened with our county, and I think we need to take a couple of minutes and reflect on it. And that is that one of our sister counties, Erie, had a terrible snowstorm, and the call went out from the state of New York to assist the people in Buffalo with this 7 feet of snow that they received. Having lived in Buffalo for 4 years, I know how bad the storms can be out there, and particularly in the South Buffalo area, to get 7 feet of snow is more than even a bad snow out there. Several members of our county highway crew went out there on short notice, and I think it's important that we think about the fact that they did that. They left on the 19th of November, and those individuals are Willie Vandermark, Matt Watrous, Kevin Hulbert, and Joe Seidel. They got to Buffalo with equipment from the county and were immediately put to work. They used their front end loader and our three dump trucks to cart off snow. That's the hardest part of a snowstorm is what do you do with the snow, even if you can unblock the streets. And the people out there were happy to see the help from other counties, including ours, and we're glad that they were ambassadors of goodwill. I'm going to invite Jeff Smith, our highway director, up and ask if he might say a few words about this. I know that these were representatives of your whole department, Jeff.
Thanks, Mike. Yes. First of all, I'm a little surprised, but they wanted me to speak for them tonight. They didn't want to get up here and stand next to the mic. I was a little surprised. On behalf of them, they want to thank all of you for this recognition this evening. Very universally throughout the department with these individuals, they want to make it very clear that They are just doing their job. When the question was asked, they immediately stepped up and answered yes. But the belief is, and I believe it's true, that the same could be said for everyone in the department. It's really universal throughout. That a lot of our employees would have been happy to go and help our neighbors. We hate to see that those devastating things happen to our neighbors, but we do enjoy and like the fact that we can and are able to go out there and lend a helping hand to everyone. It does, I think, in a lot of ways give us the reassurance that if we're ever in need of something, that, you know, they'll be quick to come and help us in return. I wanted to let you know that we really appreciate the recognition that our department as a whole has given and these individuals, and I thank you for doing it. Thanks. Wintry mix tonight, so we're going to exit stage left. And thank you.
Thanks all for coming out tonight. I do want to move up the resolution for the bylaws of the Human Rights Department at some point. I'd sort of like to do it now if the legislators have no objection to that. That's out of Government Operations Committee. So, Dooley, I think it would be, it's Health and Human Services. It's Peter. Peter, would you move Resolution P for us?
Sure. I'd like to move Resolution P with great pleasure. I think it's a good resolution, and it's going to carry the Human Rights Commission far ahead. So that's my motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion about the bylaws resolution. Will Burbank.
Actually, I talked with Peter, and there's actually a revised version that I would like to move either as a substitute or alternative.
Is it old?
And it's in your packet. It's the proposed change offered by Mr. Stein, but I gather, Peter, it was written by somebody else.
By Pat Pryor.
By the committee, correct. So I would move
you're
that.
Moving to substitute?
Yes.
Is there a second for the motion to substitute? Peter?
Second, and I deem it friendly.
Point of order. My packet has O is the human rights bylaw, and P is salary for the deputy.
It is O. You're right.
Okay. Okay.
We moved O, approval of revised Human Rights Commission bylaws. That was moved by Peter and seconded by Dave. And now Will's substitution has been offered and accepted as friendly to the mover. Is it friendly to the seconder? It's friendly to the seconder as well. So now we're on the substitute. Discussion?
I just have a question.
Leslin?
I'm taking it as this piece of paper and only the blue things, the areas that are highlighted in blue, are the changes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Dooley Kiefer.
Well, strange as it may seem, I will be voting against these bylaws. I appreciate the few changes that have been made, but I feel very strongly that it is a mistake to include rules of procedure in great detail in bylaws. It's harder to change bylaws than it is to change rules of procedure, and it would not take much time to move the details belong in rules of procedure out of the bylaws. I didn't think it was my job to do that. I gave every explanation why it's important not to have them in the bylaws when I had a chance to meet with the bylaws committee of the commission. And I'm disappointed to see that not enough time was allowed to have that happen. I can't support bylaws with those details in them. So.
Anything else?
And I'd like the minutes to reflect why I'll be voting no.
Let's see. I've got Peter, Leslin, Carroll. And then Jim.
Are you calling on me?
Yes.
Yeah. At Cornell, I was involved a lot in various organizations and wrote lots of bylaws, sections of bylaws. And I think these bylaws are simple, easy to understand, and no more complicated than is necessary to do the job. I think it hits all the high points, and it is supported by the committee and supported by HHS, and I think there's no real question.
Leslie?
I have a follow-up question for Dooley, if that's okay. Dooley, can you tell me what, I don't know what you're referring to when you talk about the procedures, what sections in particular you're referencing?
Question is, do I have a copy of the full bylaws here?
Okay, well, while Dooley does that, if I can, there's just one slight change for me in on the membership, Article 3, number 1. It still refers to being appointed by the Board of Representatives, so that's just a slight typo that needs to change to Tompkins County Legislature.
I assume that's friendly?
That's certainly friendly to me.
Yes.
Can we go to Carol, please?
I was going to ask the same question of Dooley about which sections, and then ask somebody from the committee or the commission to tell us why they decided to leave those in there. I don't have strong feelings either way.
Well, I found an example in Article 8, meetings. Mm-hmm. It's important to say that they're going to meet and who decides when and what a quorum is. But if you get to numbers 5 through 10, mm-hmm. public participation, the length of time members of the public can speak, and mm-hmm. on and on, those are the level, that's the level of detail that belongs in rules of procedure. Mm-hmm. So Article 8, sections 5 through 10 would be an example. And Article 9, communication, numbers 3 through 5 is another example. And the commissioner's code of conduct, that's all of Article 10, another example. So there's just a lot of that that I think should be somewhere else. Not done away with, but rules of procedure.
Yeah, I've seen this done both ways, so I just did the commission consider in their recommendations. Do you want to hear the answer from Peter or from Karen?
Okay. I want to go back to Leslie because I think I cut her off.
That's all right. I mean, I had the same question, so that's one, and then I can continue.
Well, I'm asking to hear from one of them about.
You want to hear?
I just wanted to hear why they decided to do it this way. I've seen it done both ways as we've rewritten bylaws.
Would someone want to come to a microphone and respond to that?
Or to our committee.
What would be the issue of moving it?
Pat Pryor.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. Can you repeat the question for me?
I believe the question has to do why you decided to include those items as part of the bylaws rather than separately, as rules.
Rules and procedures. Okay. Well, that's pretty simple, actually. We didn't think of doing separate rules and procedures at the time. I would make a couple points. One is that although I can certainly see that there could be separate rules and procedures and those could be pulled out of bylaws to do that, I also don't see from anything that I've researched about bylaws, and as chair of the committee, I did some research before we started about the recommendations for bylaws and that kind of thing, and I didn't find anything in those recommendations that would prohibit having the rules and the procedures incorporated into the bylaws themselves. And as we talked about these, we were mindful of the people that might at some point be looking at this. Since this language is also going to be presented to the Charter Committee, and hopefully whatever we come up with that's revised will then become part of the revised charter, and since this will be information that will be available in places like our website, we wanted to make it as accessible as possible to the public. And it felt to us as we discussed it that keeping them in the bylaws
would put them in a place where people would be more apt to find them, to know where to go, than if we stuck them off in a separate document. So given that I could find nothing that prohibits it, and it seemed to serve our purposes to keep them together, we decided, once it was brought up to us, Julie brought the question up, we decided we preferred to keep them together.
Thank you, Pat. Okay, Carol?
Thank you.
Let's go back to Leslin, then Jim.
Thank you. Pat is sitting down. Pat, I was very happy to hear you mention tonight about the intention to continue to do advocacy work, and I'm just wondering, where is that reflected in these bylaws? Because that's the part that I have trouble with seeing advocacy taken out. I don't see it, and so I'm just asking, where is it reflected here? Whomever.
I think the word advocacy is inherent in everything that these bylaws say, whether the word itself is there and spelled out or not. I know, Leslin, that you and some people would have a preference probably for keeping it in. I don't think we meant any to change the, in fact, what we will be doing. I think that just as we worked with the language and worked at ways to describe what it is that we're going to do, this is the language we came up with, and this seemed to suit our purposes. I don't think anybody should interpret it that we are no longer going to be advocating for human rights in the community, because we're certainly going to be doing that.
I appreciate hearing that, but from my own experience, I can honestly share that having worked and being involved with organizations where we did a lot of advocacy that wasn't reflected in our bylaws or even our mission, how much trouble we got into when people started asking, why are you doing this stuff? It doesn't say that. It's not reflected there. And that's why I asked that question, because when I read this, it didn't feel, there are things that say, yeah, there are things you'll be doing, but it didn't feel like that was as strong as it used to be reflected. And so I just wondered where it was. And I appreciate hearing that that's the intention. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that the notes can reflect that as well, that that is very, very clear. I had a couple of other questions. The 15-member body, does that 15-member include the liaison from the legislature or no?
At this point, to the best of my knowledge, everyone who's on the commission is appointed by the legislature as a commissioner. And I'm not sure, to tell you the truth, Leslin, whether in the past that number has included the... And so I'm sorry, I don't have an answer
that's
to that.
Right. I don't know either. That's what I'm asking. Is that a voting position?
I'm sorry. Can I add something?
But yeah.
We've had a little bit of discussion about, we've been pretty busy, but we have thought of the fact that we needed to ask the legislature to appoint a liaison for our group. And we just hadn't gotten around to it yet. And I think in our thinking, that would be someone who is not a voting member of the commission, but it would be someone who would act more as in that liaison function to learn about what we're doing, keep that in front of the legislature to bring to us anything that we needed to hear from the legislature. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn by saying that, but I think that's what our thinking was.
But the issue hasn't been brought up to the body just yet.
Yeah.
You're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Thank you. And the other place that I will mention that I have some trouble with is under membership number 3, which seems I understand the need, but it seems rather exclusive. And so I'm troubled that it has to be a very particular type of person. I mean, we all sit on boards and we recruit people who don't. I mean, there's really strong language about having demonstrated experience and knowledge.
Some of this language was written with the idea of carrying forward the sentiment of the previous bylaws. And the previous bylaws had some fairly explicit language also about the type of experience we would be looking for in people who were members of the commission, or the, you know, the kind of work that they might have done that would help them to be good commissioners. So I'm not sure how explicit it was in the language, but I think our sense was that we wanted to be clear that you have to have a real commitment to this kind of work. You have to care about it. You have to be willing to put in the time and the work and the effort. And it's not always easy. And sometimes you're going to get criticized and you're going to be out there in public. And so we felt that this language, by including this, this would help to say, you know, if people have demonstrated their willingness to do this kind of work in the past or have shown this kind of experience, that would be one thing that would say to us, okay, you understand what it would mean to be a member of a Human Rights Commission. I don't think that we intend this to rule anybody out who would come to us and say, I don't have an awful lot of experience, but I have, you know, a huge commitment to this. I'm willing to learn. I want to be involved. I want to do the work. You know, show me what needs to be done by any means. But I, you know.
So I appreciate hearing that, Pat, but for me, this is what you just said about people being committed and willing to do this work and having a vested interest in human rights seems more inclusive language than someone who has demonstrated experience and knowledge. That's a little different to me. And yes, what you said seemed a little bit more inclusive, and that's what I'd like to see here.
County Attorney Jonathan Wood, did you want to weigh in at some point here?
Talise would like to speak, if she may.
For that, the membership that number three, that wasn't changed from the previous bylaws.
Where's the old bylaws? Because that's one that I looked at.
The old bylaws were much more
explicit. Karen, we can't hear you unless you're at a microphone. Karen Baer.
I don't have the old bylaws either, but if I recall correctly, the former language was much more exclusive, saying that members had to have specialty in either gender, race, sexual orientation, or labor. I mean, it was a long laundry list of people that would be seen as qualified members. So that's the language. If you have the language in front of you, do you have the language in front of you?
I don't know if I do, but I that was one area that I looked at very specifically because I was concerned about it. And I don't think I have it in front of me right now.
Yeah, I believe that the former version was very academic in terms of, I mean, the purpose is the same, to make sure that people who sit on the commission have some kind of interest, whether that's experiential or aspirational, in order to do this work, and that they care about certain aspects, not just race, but they also care about other issues related to social justice.
So, Karen, even what you just said, experiential or aspirational, sounds a little better to me than you have to have demonstrated experience and knowledge. Even that sounds
that may,
a little
that
more
may be
inclusive.
True, and, but and the language is theirs. And I think that it will be, I'm of the impression that it will be implemented very broadly. And you can see from the membership that we currently have that there's nothing exclusive about it.
I want to catch Jonathan Wood. He wanted to make a comment.
No, just to answer the question on the 15.
Yes.
There are 15 members that are appointed, one of whom is a member of the county legislature with full voting rights and everything. There really is no position of liaison to the
Thank you for that clarification.
Sure.
So, Pat, did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Leslin, are you through?
I think I am.
All right.
But I might have one other thing.
Unless there's something more, just put your hand up again. I want to go to Jim Dennis, then Martha Robertson, then Dooley Kiefer, then Carol.
Thank you, Michael. I'm very pleased that members of the commission, new members of the commission, appeared here and spoke for the new bylaws or the bylaws, given the fact that they've spent a good deal of time promulgating these. And as my memory serves me, it appears to be a set of rules that will help the commission move in the direction that we need to have them move. I believe that it becomes a minimal thing to me if words are in the bylaws and they should be somewhere else and they're not there. That really doesn't make a lot of difference to me. What makes a difference to me is what action the commission takes. And you can write it, and you can write it on the back of an envelope. But if you're following the rules that you've set up and you're doing the things and promoting the things that you want to do and should be done in the county, that's what I hope happens. I've been here since 1971. I was around at the beginning of the commission. I was not a member, but I certainly was aware of it as a city council person and the way it all got started in Tompkins County, and it was not an easy thing by any means. And through the years, it's taken different shapes, but and I'm sure rules have been changed and words have been parsed, but it's always had a view that they were working on the issues that were stated by people here. And I'm pretty confident no matter what happens with these things, and they will be approved, that this board or this commission, if they see a need to change some words, they will change the words. And all of it doesn't really do anything for me, except I'm looking for people who want to serve, who want to work, who want to get their hands in the issues that we need to do. So I'm hoping everybody supports this to the full extent.
Martha?
Yes, I think this is a worthwhile conversation, and feedback from legislators is important. But I also think that we should give a tremendous amount of deference to the volunteers who put their time into doing this work, into being on the commission and to doing the really detailed work of drafting bylaws that make sense. And I think they're the folks who have to work with it and work with the bylaws and use them and make sure that they support the mission. And so I'm very happy to vote for these in the form that they are, with perhaps one exception. Jonathan, you said that there is meant to be one county legislator among the 15 members?
Well, I said that there is. They're appointed. So the legislature has appointed one. But that's been a practice, but it's never been a rule or anything.
Okay. So I don't see any language here one way or the other. So is that county charter?
There's not a specific legislator seat on the Human Rights Commission.
Okay. All right, and if that's the desire, then great. Or I just want to articulate that and see if that was an oversight or is that on purpose.
Right. Just to clarify, what it says is the 15 are appointed by the legislature.
Right.
The legislature has chosen to appoint a member of the legislature, but there's never been a requirement.
Okay. So I guess most of our boards do seem to have one and sometimes two positions. And I guess I would just ask if that's something that was considered. And I guess Karen or anybody else want to talk about that.
Okay. I've got three ahead of you, Peter.
Okay.
Sorry.
A question of was there any thought about formally including a position for a county legislator on a commission?
I do everything at your pleasure. So whoever you appoint to our board is, we're willing to work with anybody. My experience coming to Tompkins County was that legislators did not serve on city boards and commissions. And so that was the norm for me. But when I came here, I realized that, yes, there is a legislator that has a voting right on the board. And it's very clear that it's not a liaison position, but a voting member. So, and there's nothing in the bylaws saying that's either right or wrong, and according to your own rules. So,
right, and the boards, we have all different flavors. We sometimes have, you know, a voting. More often those are ex officio members.
So liaisons are, I mean, a liaison adds an interesting component because it becomes a go-between, the two bodies, the legislature and the Board of Commissioners. And I think the commissioners would agree that we find that role to be very important because we need to create ways of being able to communicate with you as an advisory board. They need to be able to communicate, and you need to know what the advisory board is doing so that you can have conversations about the work that we're doing. So I would consider the liaison position to be really very important, and in order for that to be really effective is to have somebody from the legislature coming to our meetings on a regular basis and bringing back the good news of our work to this body.
Mm-hmm. Are you done, Martha? Thanks.
Yeah.
I have Dooley, Carol, Leslin, and Peter. Dooley?
Yes, thank you. I chose to limit my comments tonight to just the rules of procedure. I have questions about other parts of the bylaws. There are some things that aren't crystal clear to me, but there seems to be a great groundswell of let's pass this tonight. So I'm only going to address one other thing right now. That was a discussion of how is the former membership described. And my recollection is that it mentioned the number of positions that would really be liaisons to different communities within the county. I don't have that language in front of me, but what I do have in front of me is language from Local Law Number 1 of 1979, which establishes the Human Rights Commission. And there it says, composition appointment term, there'll be a Tompkins County Human Rights Commission consisting of 15 members appointed by the Board of Representatives for terms of 3 years. In making appointments to the commission, the Board of Representatives shall take into consideration the various religious, racial, nationality, political, and economic groups in an effort to make the commission representative of Tompkins County. So that, to me, is the local law that governs the commission, and that language was better reflected in the previous description of membership. I don't have an argument with the description of membership now. I think Leslin's comments are very appropriate, but I just wanted to try to straighten out what it had said previously.
We have Carol, Leslin, Peter, me, and then let's vote, please. Carol?
Okay, so I appreciate the discussion we're having tonight. I support these. I'm glad we had the discussion because a month ago when these first came to us and we decided they needed a little more work. We did have the old version and the new version in front of us at that point, and I did notice that the word advocacy had
was not here, and comparing them one next to another, I was curious to hear more about what was the difference. I understand a lot more now that what we're looking for is community advocacy about an issue that's really important. And reading them now without having them right next to each other, it's clear to me that there is no way to encourage equality, discourage discrimination, encourage opportunities for involvement in all phases of community life for everyone, or offer leadership to promote positive change as it relates to civil and human rights without advocacy in today's world. So it does seem to me that looking at it in light of the discussion that is built in. I understand the point about looking for people who have demonstrated experience and knowledge in promotion and protection of civil and human rights. And I would assume that what the committee means by that is community-level experience and or personal experience or individual experience. And I wondered if it would clarify it to just put those words in there, who possess demonstrated personal and or community experience in that sentence, to clarify that people are welcome. I think that might get at the what was meant before in the list of various types of experience that one might have in these areas. This leaves it more open that you don't have to look for people to occupy that particular seat at a particular time. But I don't know if that would help. If just nod your heads if I should keep going on this or just because I haven't actually proposed it yet. But if it would be friendly, I might.
Okay, all of a sudden they're becoming shy. I would argue that leaving off the adjectives makes it more broad. I mean, once you start adding personal, community, there may be other types of experience that we have not delineated. So I think that to a certain extent, you have to be able to trust your advisory board to apply the broad measure in a way that is inclusive.
Well, I'll leave it up to anybody else who see if there's more than one who thinks that's important. I don't want people to feel left out if it is their own stories that speak to them and that they can help to present to the community on this body.
Back to Leslin, then Peter.
Please bear with me. This body as it exists right now, this commission, most of you, I know, this is what you intend to do. This is what you will do. 3 years from now, the body could change. And I know, Pat, you know this all too well. And things can be taken so very literally or not that the intent is no longer there. And that's why I'm bringing those questions up in terms of things being a little broader, etc. That aside, I just want to ask two things about number one again, because now I'm relatively confused. Because Jonathan said the 15-member includes a voting legislator seat. But Kathy, you're saying no, it doesn't. So which one is it?
John or Kathy?
I think what we're saying that there are 15 voting members mm-hmm. appointed by this legislature, one of whom of the people who was appointed is a legislator. It's not specific. There are none of the seats are specifically designated for legislator or anybody else.
Got you. It's just been our practice that we have appointed someone to that seat.
Exactly.
So if the commission filled up with 15 community members, that, you know what, I can't figure it out. The other thing that I need to ask just about this is, are there term limits? You can serve it's 3 years, but can you serve consecutive 3-year terms? And how many?
Infinite number. It doesn't speak to that. It just
Peter, please use your microphone.
No, I see it doesn't speak to that, and that's why I'm asking that question.
Yes.
Should we consider term limits?
We don't have term limits for anybody else, do we? I mean, legislators
have. We have term limits on all kinds of things. Some have, some don't. It's a question.
Yeah. Well, I personally don't see why.
If the commissioners don't feel like we should, then I'm fine with that. I'm just asking.
Okay. I think the answer to the question, Leslin, is there's not term limits on this.
Thank you. That's all I need to know.
Point of information or correction?
Just a second. Leslin, are you through?
I do want to say how much I appreciate, and I want it clear on the record. I don't want anybody walking out of here thinking that Leslin does not really care about this. I'm hearing comments around the table that seems that way. That's not somewhere I am. I really appreciate having the information presented by you all about what the intentions are, what you will continue to do. That makes it a little more swallowable for me. To hear that stuff, because I know most of you, and I know this is work that will be done, but I think it's also important for the community to hear and understand that. So thank you for saying it, and I really hope that our notes, our record, will reflect what you have very clearly stated as your intention around advocacy, as your intention around inclusiveness when it comes to membership. That is extremely important. So thank you.
Carol, for a point of information.
I just want to clarify that that many of our boards do have term limits. We went through a process, was it 2 or 3 years ago, on the planning committee. We reviewed all of our boards and looked at it was agony to take people, to impose term limits and lose some really long-standing members. There were pros and cons. And some of the boards did it and some didn't.
Okay. Peter, it's your turn.
Yeah, I'd like to say a few words about this, that I've heard a great deal about the word advocacy, that it used to have advocacy and now it doesn't have advocacy. And I guess that word was in the old bylaws and it isn't in the new bylaws, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't have advocacy. Advocacy is what an advocate does, what a lawyer does. The lawyer goes and argues for an individual that needs his help because he is being, he cannot deal with his own situation. And to me, it's full of that, okay? It talks about discrimination, that they are to look for and do all they can to eliminate various discriminatory practices. So that's the soul of advocacy. I don't think you have to say the word. What they're doing really is describing the word.
Peter, I'm not going to respond.
All right. I had myself next, then I have Jim Dennis. I just want to say I think the diamond here is the fact that we're seeing this commission rejuvenate. That, frankly, there were discussions among legislators, nothing official, but when the office of the commission was not well participated in and we lost our director, do we continue it in the same form? And I think we got the best possible outcome here. We got have a new director, and we have a new commission that's interested in doing this to the best of their ability. We're talking about bylaws. Bylaws are important, but they're not a be-all and end-all. If there's something wrong with them, they can be amended. I think we should just proceed. Let them give them their heads on this. Let them try it. If there's issues, we need to communicate it to them. If they have issues back to us, they can communicate. But let's help them continue this good work. Jim Dennis.
To that end, Mike, I would like to call the question.
Jim Dennis is calling the question. Do we need to do that? Is there anybody? Can we just go proceed to a vote?
We can proceed to a vote.
All right, let's proceed to a vote, Jim. Thanks. On the resolution to adopt these bylaws, Resolution O, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. The resolution is agreed to, so thank you very much. we have some other folks out there, so maybe we could move to that resolution as well. It has to do with the old library.
Mike, if we could do legislative privilege.
You want to do legislative privilege?
Yes, let's get
yeah.
All right.
Do it at the end of the
meeting. Everybody else wait?
Let me just, it's up to you. What's the privilege, or what's the pleasure of the legislature? I was thinking we'd pick the resolution to help some of the folks that are out in the audience waiting for it.
Yeah.
We have one legislator asking us to move to privilege of the floor. What's the pleasure of folks?
I prefer we do privilege of the floor. This next one may also take discussion time.
All right. How many want to do privilege of the floor first? How many want to move to the old library issue? I think more want to move to the old library issue. That's my committee, so I guess I'd better move it. Out of the old library committee, Resolution M, authorizing release of request for proposal, Tompkins County Old Library property. And I have Dave McKenna as a second. Discussion. I'll just say for the folks at home that this resolution out of the committee recommends that the four remaining responders to the request for expressions of interest, I got through that, all be invited to participate in the request for proposal process, which would proceed. And we have worked on a request for proposal, thanks to our planning department. And that's what the resolution is asking for. Carol Chalk.
First, I want to thank the committee. This was a lot of material. We don't have years of experience. You know, this kind of development isn't something that we spend a lot of time doing. And I think that the committee did, in the end here, has done a really good job of taking a lot of input, expressing some preferences about the kinds of things we'd be most receptive to, so developers who want to apply know what to come to us with, but leaving some things open so that there's some latitude here and leeway for developers to come with their various ideas. So I want to thank you. I think that it reads well. I had... in that regard, though, there was one area, the area I happen to be responsible for, as chair on my committee, that I think this legislature has expressed a little bit more of a preference related to and terminology, uses different terminology, in just two very minor areas here that I put in your packets that I'd like to propose two minor substitutes. Should I do them? Let me take the second one first. It's on packet page 3. It's the back side of the page that was in your packets, the bullet points. And I would just substitute the word greenhouse gas emissions for carbon footprint. As you'll recall, this is the section of the RFP where we're saying what the submission requirements are, and we've got a bulleted list of the information that we'd like, and this is about the bullet that says specific detailed explanation and quantification of measures to minimize, currently says, carbon footprint, including if applicable, and it goes on to say, the kinds of information we want, but you don't need to do an actual building energy model, which can be expensive at this stage of the project. We've tended to use the word greenhouse gas emissions. That's what's in our comprehensive plan. It's what we talk about. And rather than leave it up to interpretation of what the word carbon means, I thought that it would be more helpful just to include that. So I would just like to suggest that.
Could I ask Ed Marks to come to the microphone, please?
Is that a copy of that, Ed?
Did Ed get a copy of that?
I haven't seen it, but I understand what you're saying.
We talked about it this afternoon.
I wondered if you see any problem with changing that language.
No, no problem whatsoever.
Then as a mover, I would accept it as friendly. Dave does too, so that would be an amendment we would accept.
Thank you. And the second one is on the first page of the RFP. It is under the selection criteria. And here the committee expressed, the way they expressed this was the green building proposals that use highly energy efficient building methods and renewable energy will be favored. And because this body has been, has done so much on really wanting to see this kind of energy efficient building methods and renewable energy, I think it's just more straightforward to tell developers that it is something that we'd like to see. So I was suggesting the count, just as we used under the "we're requesting all proposals include mixed use," we should say the county requests green building proposals that use highly energy efficient building methods and renewable energy.
I have Joe wants to be recognized. Joe Mariana, our county administrator.
Yeah, I look at this as limiting language. So when I see requests, it tells me that we only want to see those green building proposals. I think the way it was phrased originally is pretty artful, and it really gets to what we're trying to say, which is show us what you've got. We will favor those proposals that reflect these green building principles, but it's not excluding those that don't fall into that category. So I'm a little concerned when I see that language.
So,
well, let me ask Ed if he has any comment on it also.
I guess that's a decision for the legislature. I understand both perspectives. I think that probably when you read further on, most people are going to get the idea that the expectation is that there will be quite a bit of effort put into the energy elements of their projects. Right under the determination right at the bottom of the first page and onto the second page where it talks about the criteria, we do list energy efficiency and carbon footprint as one of those criteria. So
I guess, Carol, it's not friendly with me at this point because I kind of really want to see what folks want to do with that. So if that's something you want, I would ask you to move it as an amendment.
I do want to move this. Can I speak to it?
Yes. Well, if you get a second. Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Carol?
The committee is coming back with two pretty specific requests that it must have reviewed. One, it's made the decision that we're requesting mixed uses, at least one other use, such as commercial, public purpose, or not-for-profit, in addition to residential. And it is, there's a should, housing should be designed to serve a diverse population. The ownership opportunities are if possible, so that's a little more open. But those are two things that we're defining. Yeah. In spite of the fact we could satisfy various types of housing use or various types of uses, commercial, residential. Those have the opportunity down the block. If there's not enough commercial, somebody will open a project down the block, within a number of years if we don't do this with this block. But green building, once you build a building, that stays there for what? I mean, we're expecting buildings. We're not expecting teardowns here. We're expecting buildings that could be there for 50 years, 100 years, however long. And it just seems to me that this legislature has expressed a preference, that where we can impact that kind of activity, it's in our comprehensive plan that we do so. So it would seem to me to be a missed opportunity. In addition, there are probably, certainly at least three or four legislators here who, when it comes time to vote on which one of these projects, if we get multiple proposals, we're going to pick, you know, we are going to use that as one of the criteria. We've been pretty open about that. So to me, to not be open about it here when any particular project would need to get 8 of our votes to proceed, it just seems to me to be not being fully out there in terms of what a preference would be. So I just think it makes much more sense to put it in here, and that if we're going to have to specify, if we're going to pick three things to specify, that certainly would be one of them.
On Carol's amendment, Jim Dennis, then Peter Stein.
Please don't view this as sarcastic, but I don't think those three words are going to save the world. Drop your guns would save the world. I get from this sentence that we want a highly energy efficient building method that uses renewable energy. And, oh, yeah, we're going to favor that. And I don't know that we can say it any stronger than that. And I will not support adding the words "the county requests."
Peter Stein.
Perhaps someone can help me. I don't really understand why we want mixed use. What's the argument for it? If the right way to do something is to provide only housing, then what's the matter with that? The right way is to supply...
Peter, this is on the amendment.
On the amendment.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize. All right.
Sorry. I'll come back to you on the main resolution. Then Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I think this suggestion adds ambiguity, makes things more confusing. If the goal is, number one goal is for a building that uses renewable energy, then we better say that. We probably should have said it a long time ago. I think to say that these measures have will help forward a proposal, will help a proposal be selected, is accurate. And I think the original language was clear, and certainly the list of things that we're looking for was clear. But to say the county requests such and such proposals, I do not think it works at all. I think it will create quite a bit of confusion and problems for the developers.
Will?
It suggests that's the criterion we're going to use, and I don't think that's correct.
Martha, I don't read it that way. I think it would make it clearer. I think that this has been an evolutionary process. I think we have all been learning. Well, first off, we were thrilled that we had so many viable proposals, and then that shrank, and then we heard from the community of their interest. It's really been a moving series of things. In the meantime, I think many of us have been just become acutely aware of the pressing need to begin to rethink everything we do in from a green perspective. There's a whole discussion about the need for a new gas pipeline. Well, one of the alternatives is to build green, and here we have an opportunity in something that we have actually control over to really tilt the balance in that direction. And I guess I would support this change.
Ready to vote? Dave, is your hand up?
Yes, it is.
Got it up there so I see it well.
Sorry about that.
And then Dave and then Leslin. This is on the amendment now.
Right. I believe that it already asked for a green building proposal. That's obviously what we want. And the county obviously issued this request. So I see it as redundant to put that in there a second time. I just don't see a need for it.
Leslin?
I will pass. Thank you.
Can we vote on the amendment? On Carol's suggestion on the paper you have in your folder to add the word "the county requests" and delete the words "will be favored." All those in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. All opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 10? I missed somebody, right? 7. So that does not pass. So we're back to the main motion.
Clarification. Sure. So there were two things on the amendment. But there are a lot of changes here, but those were...
The only things that Carol asked, the first one was at the... back, the handwritten item, greenhouse gas emissions.
And that was okay?
That was friendly.
Okay, thank you.
On the main motion, Peter Stein.
I just don't understand what the reason is for asking for multiple use. That's all. I'd like to hear the argument for it.
Well, I think that the committee looked at all of the proposals. I think, with maybe with the exception of one, they all were multiple-use proposals. And I think in the original RFEI, we said we were interested in having mixed use of some kind.
Yes.
And we know that, for example, discussions about lifelong played into part of this. And this, anytime you would add them, that becomes a mixed use. So most of those folks had at least discussed this with lifelong, for example.
Right, but I was just thinking, I haven't really kept track of this, but the one for selling condos didn't have mixed use, did it? I mean, they didn't make any...
Yeah, I think they were.
They did?
I believe it. It wasn't all condos. Am I wrong on that one? All right, then I guess I am wrong.
So... That means we're telling them that we won't do what they want to do unless they change that. Is that correct?
We haven't ruled anything out at this point.
Can we have Ed talk about it?
All right, let's get in order here. I've got Leslin next. Then get your hands up so I can get you on the list. Martha and Dooley. No,
Mike was up half.
I'm in there.
I'm sorry, Mike.
It's okay.
Martha, Dooley, Mike.
Well, I think Mike was first.
It's okay, I'll go last.
All right, Mike,
I just actually want to answer Peter's question. I mean, that was...
Go ahead, Mike, go ahead.
I just wanted to... The city also made it very... We met with the city very early in the process. Savante was pretty clear, you know, this is kind of a vision we have for our neighborhoods. And at the end of the day, I mean, it's a part of the city. So,
okay.
I mean, he definitely did see that as part of the vision of a mixed-use, walkable kind of community, stores, people living up top, that kind of idea, so... whether you agree with that or not, I mean, the city is certainly, that's one of their goals.
So. Martha.
Yeah, I just want to ask Ed to speak to that. I mean, I think it's, as a general matter, we like, improves the variability among uses, and that helps the neighborhood. But Ed, if you want to, I'd like to hear what he has to say about it specifically.
Well, I think specifically with respect to lifelong, all of the respondents didn't initially indicate that they would necessarily include lifelong, but then subsequently all indicated that they would try to talk with lifelong about the option of them collaborating on the project. So I think by definition they kind of understand there's some mixed-use desire to have something mixed-use in there, and all were willing to do it as the process went forward. And I think it is, I mean, the city was quite clear, as Mike said, that they'd like to see the ground floor activated with some kind of use and activity other than residential, if possible.
Dooley?
Ed said what I was going to say.
Leslin?
Yes, thank you. I'm looking at the larger document here and loving the language in there about our living wage policy. But I'm realizing at the same time that I don't see anything in here about our diversity and inclusion, which usually is part of most of our RFPs. There's something in there that speaks to that. And at a committee, I know we talked about that. And then I also wondered, because my recollection is that the committee, we also talked about I certainly don't want to put words in Kathy's mouth, but I thought at a committee we talked about local labor. And it wasn't a requirement per se, but there was language around it. And I don't see any of that reflected in any of these papers here. So I am just wondering what happened to it.
Or maybe I'm just
getting old and
forgetful.
I don't remember that being one of the things that we said had to be in there. Mike, do you remember that, or Dooley?
Not in the bulleted things. It wasn't going to be in the bulleted portion there, but was going to be reflected somewhere in this group of papers, just like the living wage is reflected in this group of papers.
We did talk about it, but along with an RFP, aren't there other attachments that we send that indicate our interests?
Can I just point out that Kathy just brought to my attention at the bottom of the bullets, we're asking answers to the following questions. Do you plan to use local contractors? Does your organization have a diversity and inclusion plan?
These pages are not numbered, so I'm having a hard time. I don't have anything at the bottom of my bullets.
Top of page three.
Four. Top of page four.
That may be what we were thinking of there.
Yeah.
We asked them the question. We didn't say that they had to do it, but we'd like them we'd like to know about it.
Thank you. That's all I'm asking for. Thank you.
You're right.
Thanks,
Carol. Carol.
Did you get it to everybody else on the list already? I just would like to know from the committee, back to the items that you did request, that we talked about the mixed uses, how does the housing should be designed to serve a diverse population and then provide ownership opportunities if possible. How does that one fit with the proposals and the discussions with the developers as you went along?
Who are you asking?
There was only one that in the beginning that had ownership opportunities. So either from Ed or from the chair of the committee, what was the discussion, are we limiting ourselves?
In discussion with each of them, we talked about the options and whether they could do it or not, both of those, ownership or not ownership.
So would we be limiting ourselves to one developer? There was only one among those who suggested owner occupancy, and I don't remember the diversity in the population.
Ed?
Among the proposals.
Yeah. Obviously, in the public process, there was a lot of people that came out talking about the interest in ownership units. Many of the other proponents acknowledged that there was an interest in that. They didn't think when they put together the proposals that there was a market for the number of units that one of them was proposing as for sale units, and many of them still don't believe that's the case, but they said they would be willing to look at including ownership units in their project, and they would evaluate what they thought they could reasonably market in their responses to the RFP. So I think most of the respondents indicated a willingness to take a second look at ownership units as part of their project. One of them may or may not be able to because of the type of project they're developing.
To follow up, so there were three developers who indicated that they'd be willing to consider a project that where they had to find financing for both owner to sale units and rental units.
Well,
in the
it's
same
not clear whether they would mix them or not, but they indicated a willingness to look at ownership units as part of their proposal.
I don't think we can get a lot more specific than that because some of that was in discussions that we had to keep in executive session for proprietary reasons.
Yep. So I'm just asking the question, are we limiting ourselves too much by being this specific on this one?
I don't think so. Okay, can we vote?
On what?
On the resolution.
We haven't discussed the resolution at all. So I would like to...
Well, I move the resolution, and it's been seconded, and that's been up for discussion.
All that's been discussed is the request for proposal. So with respect to the resolution...
Go ahead.
I would like to ask in line 7 that the date when the library was originally built be added. That's not a substantive change, but it's information. And I would like to ask similarly in line 27 or 21, the date of that resolution be inserted. Again, in line 33, for clarity, I would like to move this little change. While differing in design, comma, in the mix of proposed uses, comma, and in the type and market niche of the residential elements of the project, dot, dot, dot. So repeat the word in for clarity. And the last thing I wanted to say is on line 45, it says the accompanying request for proposals, and I wanted to find out whether that's going to be attached to this in the minutes. Is that what that means?
Would we normally attach that, Kathy? She says no.
What does accompanying mean?
It's the reference here is to the document that is a part of this action. When it's accompanying, it would go, if anybody's reading this, they would also read the request for proposal that's being sent out to these four developers.
So I guess I would like to see the accompanying thing be printed in the minutes also then.
Can we add it to the notes? I think that would be available then.
I'll have it in my files, but I'm asking that it be in the minutes.
That's a little lengthy.
Is that a motion?
All right. Well, let's take these minor things. Julie, the things before that were all friendly as far as this mover is concerned. I don't know about Dave. Dave says they're friendly. But this last one, I don't know if we need to put that in the minutes or not.
So I move that it be added because it says accompanying.
Is there a better word than accompanying? Can we change the word accompanying to proposed or the approved request for proposal? Perhaps change it from accompanying to approved. And it was approved.
Well,
by passing this, we're approving.
We should vote on it separately if we're going to approve it separately. But I don't know, Mike. I've said what I think should happen.
Carol?
Is there an objection to putting this in the minutes, having it open for the public to see more easily? I don't have
website,
a problem with it.
Isn't it on the website, Ed?
Usually, I think practice is usually when somebody asks to put something in the minutes, we usually do, unless there's a good reason not to.
This has been publicly on the website for the last couple weeks, and it will be public once it's finalized and released.
Yeah, we aren't hiding anything from anyone. Martha.
The reason not to is it's five pages all by itself.
Right.
And if somebody's trying to follow the thread of the meeting, that's going to be really hard. Maybe there's a way to say that the request for proposals as the final version published on the county, you know, available on the county's website, in the planning department or whatever.
Put a hyperlink there. Good to go.
Yeah, put a hyperlink.
How about just taking the word out? That's been suggested.
Another way to do it.
That would be friendly to me to take out the word accompanying. Is it friendly to Dave?
Can you please tell me what line you're on?
45.
Thank you.
Page 15.
Got it.
No, I don't think it's friendly to me, Mike. I'd like to leave it the way it is, and I'd like to have some kind of a link put in that you can go see that document in another spot.
Hmm.
Okay, it doesn't need to be in the notes. It just needs to be tied in where it's easily found. Okay.
When
the suggestion, Dave, however, you don't think attaching it to the notes would work?
They don't have
you can put it in the note. I don't really care where we put it as long as there's a link to it at the end of that statement. I think that would cover what Carol wants and cover everything else, too.
All right. It's also, Kathy Covert is saying that it's also on the meeting portal, so it could be looked at there. Ed Marks.
The only thing I'd say about hyperlink is that it won't be there forever.
That's right.
It'll be there for a while. If you want a permanent record attached to the minutes, hyperlink probably...
Well, notes will be around forever.
The notes would be around forever, yeah.
All right, let's just say they'll be attached to the notes. Let's leave it that way. And I'd like to move to a vote.
Are we taking out accompanying or not?
I'm sorry?
No, we're not taking out the word.
No, we're not taking it out. Dave, that was not friendly to Dave, so it would require a motion to take that out. And so I just thought that, as chair of the committee, I think if we add that to the notes, it'll be available for somebody who wants to look at it, in addition to being on the website and hyperlink for a long time. Yes, Dooley.
Well, I wanted to vote for this, but I strongly believe that it's important to have this very crucial document in our minutes, and to the extent that that is being refused because the notes have no official standing, I will have to vote against this, and I'm really sorry to do that. But may the minutes say why I'm doing it. That's all.
Julie, I must say I'd be very disappointed to have you vote against this after all the work, good work you did in our committee based on,
where the document
where
goes.
The document appears. I think that's sad if you're not able to vote for that.
I feel sad, too.
Carol?
Yeah, so in the interest of, it would be really nice to have this come out of here unanimously if we could. I didn't get everything that I wanted. So in the interest of trying to do that, can we leave in the word accompanying, but, on recommendation of the old library, that the accompanying request for proposals, comma, which is available in the county's notes of whatever today's date is, comma, be issued. Would that be, you got erating one clause, would that be friendly? And would that be friendly to Dooley as well?
Because we're adopting the resolution, you're talking about it being there already. Don't we have a timing issue
with
that?
Which will be available. Rather than quibble here, why don't we just add a clause that refers to where it is and put it.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I heard a strong enough argument why we can't just have this document as part of the minutes.
Well, if someone wants it in the minutes, I think we need a motion.
I thought I made that motion.
You did.
I didn't think you made the motion to do that. If you're making a motion, Dooley, then I should have asked for a second.
Yes.
We have a motion from Dooley Kiefer to add this full RFP to our minutes. Is there a second for that? Seconded by Leslin McBean Claiborne. Discussion on adding that on that motion. I'm taking it on the side. It's really an amendment, what we're doing.
Just vote,
please. Can we vote on it?
Yes.
So I really think this is ridiculous to be holding this hostage over from either side of this. So I'd like to amend the motion to say that the accompanying request for proposals, which is available in the county, which will be available in the county's on notes of this date on the county,
portal. Motion on the table,
so
Carol.
The
motion on the table, Carol, is to add the full RFP to the minutes.
And I am moving an amendment to the amendment.
I think that's what you're trying to do is out of order. I think it would have to come as a second motion after this one is voted on.
Is that true? By our rule? I thought there were two. So we could do two.
Well, you can, but I think I don't see how we can add the full RFP and then amend it. I think if you want to amend it, you're going to have to move that afterwards. And I would call on you. So therefore, on the amendment that's to be voted on has to put the full RFP in the minutes as opposed, I suppose, to the notes or somewhere else. All those in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4.
She's
one
in
more
there.
Somewhere?
She's in your office.
Oh, Martha's out. Did you vote, Martha? The motion was to whether to add this to the minutes.
What's the vote so far?
No, we don't do that. Yes or no?
No.
All right. So there were not eight votes to pass that amendment, so it fails. Carol, you want to propose another amendment?
Yeah, I'll propose that we. What I did before, that the accompanying request for proposals, comma, which will be available on the county's website, the meeting portal, In the notes for whatever today's date is, December 2nd, 2014, comma, and then
is there
go
a second
on
for that? And that's at line 43, I guess. Is there
I'll
a second?
That,
seconded by Mike Sigler. Is there discussion on that?
Oh, wait. No, I actually, can I change that slightly?
No.
Can I just put it up in the whereas about right above it? Instead of in the resolved, it could go in the whereas. Would that be better?
I like it as is.
I'm trying to find that to be friendly.
It's fine.
That change is friendly to Mike Sigler.
It's fine.
All right, so that's the motion. All those in favor of Carol's motion to amend, please raise your hand.
If it was friendly, we don't have to vote.
No, it wasn't friendly.
It's not the vote on the amendment.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Those opposed?
I'm going to vote for it. 9.
Those opposed? 1, 2.
Opposed.
Should be 3. That passes. So now on the main motion as amended, I'd like to vote. All those in favor of the main motion as amended, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed? 10. Peter, I didn't see your vote.
With it.
All right, so it's 10-1. That passes. Thank you very much. The committee says thank you. All right, now we're going to go back. Jay, was there anything particularly you were here on? Appointments. All right, we'll be getting to them in a little bit.
In a couple of days.
Okay. We'll go to privilege of the floor. I don't see a municipal official for municipal officials privilege of the floor. So go to legislators, and I will recognize Martha Robertson first.
I want to commend you, Carol, for voting for things that for which you didn't get all that you asked for anyway. And voting for them anyway. Thank you. I'm really happy that Nancy hasn't left yet because I just wanted to say thank you very much. And politics is very much a team sport. You are part of the team along with many, many other people. And I will say I am proud to be, despite the last 45 minutes of conversation, I'm proud to be from this county, as we saw for everything tonight from highway staff who went and volunteered to help people in a distant county, all the way to volunteers who care enough about human rights and of their neighbors to work on something as what could be seen as tedious as bylaws, to people like you and Anna who care enough about the development in the neighborhoods they live in, and they really follow these issues. So I'm very proud, even though perhaps the main issue in the recent congressional race was where I live, I'm very proud to live here. Thank you very much, Nancy.
Who else? Jim Dennis next, then Carol Chalk. Then Mike Sigler. Sorry.
I don't know what to say, but I'm just going to note that there's in Trumansburg, there's a Winterfest this Saturday, December 6th, and they're trying to celebrate the season. There's Hilby, the skinny German, it says here, Juggle Boy, ice sculpting, food and craft, open houses, face painting, which you can get almost any time in downtown Ithaca, a bounce house, Santa's traditional fire truck arrival, tree lighting, story and snacks by the fire at the library. Free family fun. Please come. And by the way, the Rongo has reopened with a really nice menu, and it looks very cool inside. And those of you who grew up in the 60s, if you can remember where it is, go up there and see the work that they've done. It's a great place. Thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, I wanted to say something about Ferguson. As we were leaving on our Thanksgiving breaks or getting ready or cooking for Thanksgiving, that decision came in. And, we saw on the news what happened in that community, but we didn't see as much about people in multiple cities. I mean, there were at least 30 different cities that I know of, including ours, around the country, where people came out and expressed their views and protested, both, I think, more the way that the decision came out, waiting till after dark, going on for droning for 45 minutes. People were pretty frustrated. And I want to thank both the people who came out here to make their views heard, and I want to thank our law enforcement. I am so thankful that we come from a community where people could make their voices heard. The police force here, and I think our sheriffs were involved as well as the city police. It was probably primarily city police, since rerouted traffic on Route 13 so that people could join a nation. You know, what the way that the protests played out nationwide was, you know, stop traffic on one of your major roads. Traffic was stopped in New York City on, if you know New York City, on both the West Side Highway, 6th Avenue, and the FDR Drive. I can't imagine what that was like. But in Ithaca, we had a community that said, yes, people's voices should be heard. And I just want to share what the reason that I think that it's really important that we, as a community, keep talking about these issues. You know, our Human Rights Commission I'm glad that they're off to a fresh start, figuring out how do we keep pushing to ensure civil rights and equal opportunity. Until we live in a world where no parents have to tell their kids about Ferguson, we need to be telling our kids, people who aren't of color, need to be telling our kids, our grandkids, and each other, pay attention to this. We don't want the country to be back where it was in the 60s and those days. We can do better than this, and I'm proud to come from a community where we are at least trying and where we at least didn't arrest people for expressing frustration.
Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to say the Library Committee, I just wanted to commend you, Mike, and commend the whole committee. I mean, I went into that kind of thinking that was going to be a train wreck, because we were kind of putting the cart before the horse, and I'm like, all right. But, I mean, in the end, I mean, we got a lot of good input. I think we have a good sense of what people in the community were, at least the people that were showing up, were looking for. I think in the end, you know, now I'm pretty happy with this RFP that went out. I'm a little surprised. I mean, we had people at the meeting last night saying that they wanted, they were against the pipeline going into Lansing because they thought that that could be a completely, you know, zero carbon emissions area where any new building going in to the county basically should be zero emissions. This was a chance for the county, you know, some of the more the people who that is their main issue had an opportunity at this junction to kind of say, hey, we think this should be a zero emissions building. They decided not to go that route. So I'm just happy with the way the whole thing kind of worked out. I'm really looking forward to these RFPs coming forward. And I'm hoping that the people that don't get it will have other opportunities in the city and in the county to go forward with their own proposals. So it's exciting. And thank you again, Mike. I thought you shepherded the whole thing rather well.
Thanks for those words, Mike, and thank you for your participation on the committee. It helped. Leslie?
Thank you. Gosh, now I forgot what I was going to say. I want to echo the shout-out to the folks at the Highway Department, our fine workers from the Highway Department who participated in helping our neighbors in Erie County clean up and try to get back to some amount of normalcy. But it also reminded me that there were other members of this community
who went as well. And one person who I want to give a big shout out to is Michael Thomas, who works with me at GIAC. He's been a Red Cross volunteer for maybe as long as I've been born, but for a very long time, and is always called on to go to disaster relief, for disaster relief work, and he's always willing. For many of, I'm sure, the highway department and other agencies who people went to do that work, we often find ourselves a little short-staffed because our members are gone. But we recognize how important it is for that sort of volunteer work. So I do want to give a big shout-out to Michael for that and to other members of the community who I may not know who went for that. I have relatives who live in that area, and I'm sure that they were very thankful, so I wanted to do that. I also wanted to jump on the Trumansburg Winter Festival bandwagon and say in downtown Ithaca, yes, downtown is open for business. It is. On Saturday is the annual Santa arrival. So Santa will be rappelling down the walls of Center Ithaca. It'll be arriving noon on Saturday. And there will be lots of festivities in Center Ithaca for the families, for children, for grown-ups. So Santa and his elves will be arriving on Saturday as well here in Ithaca. Lastly, I wanted to mention a couple of things related to Dorothy Cotton. The Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers, I have a notice here I wanted to mention to you on Saturday. Everything is happening on Saturday, December 6th, 4 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, is having a musical offering for the Ithaca community. It's free. Certainly, they can use any sort of donation if you'd like to give something. So featuring Negro spirituals, a group of people with amazing voices, including our Deputy County Administrator, Paula Younger, who are committed to preserving and educating about Negro spirituals, and that's very, very important. In that line, I also wanted to make a couple of announcements. Thank you for the proclamation for Audrey tonight. It was really well deserved. Audrey's done a lot of hard work in this community. And lots of people, I'll be the first to say, despite her sharp edge, she is very committed, strongly committed to this work. And I do appreciate, Mr. Chair, you and the legislature recognizing her in that way. On the 11th of December is her retirement celebration at the space, the Green Star Space. So if you can, please try to be there just to give her some more well wishes. And on the 12th of December is the Dorothy Cotton Institute, the DCI annual event that is happening as well. So you can get information about that from Kirby Edmonds or Laura Bronca. Pardon?
Or in our boxes.
Is that the event? We did that invitation.
Yes, you did? Okay.
What
all right.
The 11th.
Pardon?
The 11th.
The 11th is Audrey's.
Well, this says the 11th is the
gala. I'm sorry. The 11th is the DCI gala. The 12th is Audrey's. I have my dates backwards. I'm sorry about that. You all got your invitations. I'm just making sure that people will, oh, good Lord. I'll be showing up for one thing and thinking it's the other. So if you can, we'd love to see you there. Those are my announcements.
Julie Kiefer.
Two miscellaneous items. I don't know if you all read the New York State Attorney General's newsletters, but one recent thing really caught my attention, that he has a memo of agreement with Wayne County Sheriff's Office dealing with limited English proficiency. And the memo, he says, is an excellent model for all of us to look at. But, of course, I couldn't find it, so I don't know what it looks like. But I thought we should try to find it and see if we can make use of it. The other item also deals with public safety. In Oregon, there are 200 inmates in solitary confinement in their largest prison. And solitary confinement there means a tiny white-walled cell. And last year, officials began letting some of these solitary confinement individuals spend their free hour in a first-of-a-kind blue room, which is an exercise space where a projector plays video of open deserts, streaming waterfalls, and other outdoor scenes. That imagery, says the creator, who studies how nature affects behavior, is designed to calm prisoners, and inmates have responded so well that guards now use blue room time as a way to preempt bad behavior. And that just reminded me of our ongoing conversations when we were deciding what to do with the outdoor space in our jail. And we had the same instincts for there. We didn't have an expert telling us that this is what we should do. So we should feel good about choosing that, I think. That's it.
Dooley, on that comment from the Attorney General, yes, I saw that as well, and passed it on to Nathan as chair of the GO committee and our county administrator, because I was intrigued by that as well. I would just add very quickly that another celebration will be this Saturday in the village of Dryden, when we'll have the tree lighting ceremony at 5 o'clock. So come on out for that, and there'll be the churches. There'll be some games and for the kids and refreshments that have been advertised. Anyone else that wants to speak? Let's take a 10-minute break, come back, and we'll finish.
We do the thing that Jay's waiting for.
He's here on an appointment, I think. So
Jay's waiting and Karen is waiting. We have everything on the agenda.
Well, we're going to take the break at this point. We'll come back in 10 minutes. Okay. I have neither a chair's report nor chair's appointments tonight, so we'll move next to reports by staff county administrator Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. Really short tonight. A couple of things, mostly updates. We've talked about shared services. We've talked about the municipal courts and how I was asked to do the exploratory work to see if it might make any sense to look at whether restructuring the municipal courts might either save money or improve the consistency of the quality of justice. My recommendation to the committee was we had to take a look. We had to form a high-level committee, take a look at it, see where that goes, but get ourselves off the track that we're on for other things that relate to the governor's request that we put together an efficiency plan. So that recommendation went to the committee. The committee accepted that recommendation. It then went to TCOG. As a recommendation, it is sitting on the desk of TCOG right now. It will be considered at either the December or January meeting of TCOG. I'm bringing this back to you just so you know. It has been now reported in some of the, I think, the weekly newspapers. I'm beginning to get calls and letters. You probably will, too. Not surprisingly, we've characterized this as kind of the third rail. It's been talked about many times, often gets pushed back, but it is out there in the public domain. And again, TCOG will take it up either in December, which is going to be a short meeting, or in January, which will be a longer, fuller meeting. Carol will probably report on Energize New York and kind of the meeting that occurred as a part of the PEAK committee. When she does that, I'll just give you some follow-up on next action steps. You recall that this is the plan that will finance energy-related improvements to existing non-residential buildings secured by the way the payment stream occurs, the repayment, which is through the tax bill. Got a good, I think, vetting at PEAK. Carol, I don't know if this is a part of your report or not. Okay. So, again, when that happens, I'll just tell you what we're doing next to follow up on that. The last quick note. At dawn next Tuesday morning, Paula and I will be on a bus with some Cornell people going up to Saratoga Springs. to participate in a conference that is being sponsored by Cornell and the Fiscal Policy Institute that's called Local Fiscal Stress, State Austerity, and Local Response. I think this is going to be a major event in Saratoga. Invitees have included unions, municipalities, state elected officials. A number of folks will be there. It's really all about, you know, how are we all responding to the tax cap, the tax freeze, and other such directives from the state. I'm going to be on one of the panels. It's the effect of the tax cap. But again, I think it's going to be a well-attended event, a lot of support from NYSAC there. So if you're looking for us next Tuesday, that's where Paula and I will be up in Saratoga Springs. And that's my report.
Questions? County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
No report.
Questions? Joe, anything from Rick Snyder, who's not here tonight?
He's probably watching us on the internet right now.
Well,
no, he didn't.
He's probably glued right to the edge of his chair.
He did not leave any. You know, always when Rick is here, he has the good news report
right.
About sales tax. So I don't think he wanted me to be able to carry that good news to you. He wants to save that for himself when he returns. So we'll reserve that for him when he's back.
Okay. Any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Let's go to the consent agenda. I think I have 21 advisory board appointments. To the Board of Health, Janet E. Morgan. To the Office of Aging Advisory Committee, Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Eleanor May. Substance Abuse Subcommittee, C. Thomas Parson and Ron Shoneman. To the Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, Dorothy Deitch and Edward Bergman. To the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Patricia Bouchel and Stacy C. Mike. To the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, David M. Sanders, Jr. To the Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Kenneth Lansing and C. Thomas Parsons. To the Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Board of Directors, Frank P. Proto. To the Environmental Management Council, Vladimir Mikic, John Dennis, and Ron Szymanski. To the Board of Assessment Review, Martha K. Preston. To the Library Board of Trustees, Risha Mitch, Timothy Scott, and Molly Salke. To the Air Services Board, Larry Baum, Larry F. Baum, and David G. Prunty. And then we have some resolutions. Out of the Government Operations Committee, we have Resolution A, ID 5268, authorizing the lease of the airport property to the City of Ithaca for a solar array. Resolution B, 5263, scheduling a special election in Legislative District Number 9, Town of Groton, Lansing District Number 8, and Dryden District Number 3. I'm going to ask for that to be off, please. Resolution C, 5233, grant revenue adjustment to cover election expenses. Resolution D, 5240, date of the 2015 organizational meeting. From Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, ID 5264, that's Resolution E, changes in positions, various departments. Resolution F, ID 5248, authorization to disperse funds, county administration. Resolution G, ID 5243, delegating to the finance director of the County of Tompkins, New York, the power to authorize the issuance of and to sell $10 million in revenue anticipation notes of said county in anticipation of receipt of state aid during the fiscal year of said county commencing January 1, 2015. Resolution H, ID 5239, authorization to sign drafts, checks, county administrator. Resolution I, ID 5238, authorization for finance director to make year-end transfers, appropriations, and budget adjustments as required. Resolution J, ID 5237, town and city budgets and printing of tax rates. Resolution K, 5236, approving completed tax rolls and directing at the executing and delivery of warrants. Resolution J, authorizing 2015 payments for Tompkins Cortland Community College operating budget. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Dooley Kiefer, seconded by Mike Sigler. Discussion. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. We'll go to standing committees. The old library committee, and we've already taken that up. I don't have any further report. The old library committee will only be meeting as needed and probably won't meet again until next March when the RFPs come back. Public Safety Committee, Jim Dennis, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Michael. Hope you're watching, Brian. I have one resolution. It's appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, Department of Probation, and Community Justice, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Short form roll call. Go ahead.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
And that concludes my report. Thank you for listening.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
I have no report, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein is the chair.
I have no report, and our next meeting is on the 9th at the usual place at the usual time.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna.
No report.
Vice Chair. You folks are easy tonight. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank Chair.
Someone had to break this pattern. Now, I realize that five of you were at this meeting that we had yesterday. But for the benefit of those who weren't, or if those who were would like to add it to anything, please do it. We met yesterday, and we had a number of topics. We started off with some resolutions that will be coming to our next meeting from the Employment Center. I'm crashing already here. We have the quarterly report from the Convention and Visitor Bureau, and this is a little delayed because this is sort of the third quarter. But the good news is it's been a very good year, at least as of up into early fall. Occupancy in hotels were up by 5%, 0.5% rather. Daily rate was up about the same. Room demand up, room supply up. Revenue to year to date was up by 10.4%, which is very, very good news for all the programs that are supported by that valiant effort. Bruce Stoff, who gave the report, talked about all the things they've been doing, and the good news is that it's looking like next year is poised to be a very, very good year as well. He cited the upcoming swim tournaments and Cornell's 150th anniversary and a conference on food security. So it was good news, exciting. We also spent some time in the tourism realm talking about a resolution that I'm going to be bringing to the ledge at our next meeting, having to do with the issue that we've talked about before, which is these online reservation services that allow you to rent rooms. It's in many ways a very interesting model. It's bringing a lot of new visitors to our community, but there are some problems associated with that. And I've asked Mike, if possible, maybe to have a presentation at our next meeting.
I think we can do that, Will.
Okay, thank you. We then shifted gears, and we had a presentation from a group of folks that took the challenge to see if there was a viable alternative to the proposed gas pipeline that has been proposed for Dryden. And saying, okay, if not that, how would we meet the energy needs? And presenting was Melissa Camp, who you probably know from Solar Ithaca. Solar Tompkins, thank you. Gay Nicholson from Sustainable Ithaca, and Bryce Smith, who's a physics professor at Cortland. And they walked us through a PowerPoint that was about half an hour long and was designed to basically challenge some assumptions that have been off-stated. One, that affordable alternatives are, you know, might be a good idea, but they're not presently available. The idea that methane, which is natural gas, is better environmentally, and that it is low cost and low risk. And then they walked through a couple of examples of projects that are being planned that could be essentially energized in alternative ways. I'm not going to walk you through the whole thing, but I would encourage any of you who are interested to stay attuned. They're going to be making this presentation at other venues. They're very interested in talking with other governmental groups, and also I think we'd be very interested in talking with people that actually do development, just to test their hypotheses. We then heard a report from TCAD and briefly talked about our economic strategy plan, which TCAD is in the process of developing. This will be the third iteration, and it will be the economic plan for that group, and by extension us, moving forward probably for the next 8-10 years. Unfortunately, we did not have available the draft copy, so I will be asking the committee to come back one more time before our reorganization meeting and take a real hard look at that and see, is this really what we want as an economic strategy? And that meeting will be is presently scheduled for Monday, the 5th of January. Finally, we did something that maybe other committees have thought about doing. We did had a discussion on evaluating what the committee had done and soliciting opinions as to whether it made sense to continue such a committee in the future. We recognize that the decision is not ours. It'll be up to whomever is chosen as chair, but I'd be happy, Mike, to share some of the feedback that we got. So that is my report. I don't know if any committee members have anything to add or any questions.
Questions for Will. Peter Stein.
Following question popped into my mind when you talked about the person that you heard from who says that there were other ways other than extension of the gas pipe. What does that gas pipe do exactly? Is it for heating houses? Is it running to a power plant to generate electricity?
Well, that, Peter, from what we're hearing, it's a little unclear because at this point, I mean, the purported purpose is to basically to supplement and increase the amount of fuel available. But there seems to be a disconnect between that sort of stated goal and the right of way that they're acquiring, which could actually be used potentially for both transmission and sort of two-way distribution. Thank you. I get confused. It's a 10-inch pipe being proposed that that is just under the 24 pounds per. Thank you.
124, Will.
Thank you. I'm clearly out of my realm, but the key thing to understand is that it is sized to be just under the tipping point for the where it would be regulated, and the concern is that the right ways, if granted, have a potential for being used in other kinds of ways. So it's a discussion that's going to be continuing. I would encourage us to pay attention and hopefully ask hard questions. I think the folks are really, really tried to address a thorny issue.
Jim Dennis.
It's my impression, and I'm certainly open to criticism and question, that it's a 10-inch pipe used for local development in the Northeast area. They talk about a capacity number of homes, 40,000
which is obviously not something that's going to happen. There are only 35,000 structures in the whole county. But clearly it would be used for development purposes in the Cornell Park area, and where we already have two places that IDA has moved ahead with, Binoptics and Dairy One, which had to switch to propane gas to make their development complete. So it's always been my impression it was a 10-inch line for development purposes, not to the power plant.
Yeah, well, really the question I was asking, as far as I know, there's only two things you can do with natural gas. One of them is to create electricity, and the other is to heat houses. That's pretty much it.
Or businesses.
Or businesses, right, to keep it warm in the wintertime.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, which one of these things is it all for? What's the major consumption?
I think I've stated it as clearly as I can. Okay. It's for development and, property that gets built, or housing developments that get built, or those kinds of things. But it's primarily for the northeast part of Tompkins County.
Girl Chalk.
So I just want to clarify that the discussion that we heard and that we focused on was not about the pipeline. It was that what they did was they took, it was very interesting, because they took two concrete examples, one residential and one large-scale residential and one commercial, industrial. So they took the actual plans that are being proposed for that 312-unit housing, the Lucente rental housing, and they said, you know, what would it cost to put in these heat pumps for those structures, and how would you do it? And came to, it was 90, there were different kinds of heat pumps that I didn't know anything about before, a ground-sourced heat pump and an air-based heat pump. Air-based is what they're using a block from here at the affordable housing place, but smaller scale. And said it would cost, the landlord would have to charge $19 a month extra for the first, was it 12 to 15 years, and then, you know, have no energy costs because this pump that works on the same basis as your refrigerator takes, you know, you wouldn't think your refrigerator, it takes uses electricity and it turns your household air into cooling. Well, you can do that for a house, and you can do it for heating for a house even when it's below zero outside. And then they took the example of Binoptics, which is now has said that they're going to use electricity. But they took the example of the size of the building and the expansion, and they compared it to an expansion of a building that SUNY Cortland just did using a ground-based heat pump, and showed, you know, that they got the square footage and that it would deliver the power. So they were saying, you know, when we do have the community discussion about the pipeline, it's in the context of, that there are or there aren't other alternatives that really can work.
Mike Ziegler.
I just wanted to make a point of clarification. It was very much about the pipeline. In fact, I believe the title of the presentation was Alternatives to the 7-Mile Long West Dryden Road Pipeline. So, I mean, I just don't want anybody to get kind of down a road like, oh, that's not what this was about. It was certainly about that.
No, it was about alternatives to the pipeline. That was the point. There was not extensive discussion of the pipeline.
I think we're missing words. I think that, you know, we can say that it's not about that, and yet it was in the title. So usually when things are in titles, I think that that's what they're about. So as for, I enjoyed the presentation. I encourage you guys to watch it. I thought it was interesting that they've done this system at SUNY Cortland that is heating the new portion of this building, is only heating 30% of the old building. And that this kind of system will only work at 20% of SUNY Cortland. So while I think this is a great system and I think more people should adopt it like they do in Norway, it by no way mitigates the fact that I think you need this pipeline into an area of development that we have now spent millions of dollars to actually make an area of nodal development. So
This I thought it was a great discussion. We should discuss it more, but it didn't change my mind about what's needed for the county. So.
Jim Dennis?
I would not have said this had Carol not tried to describe to Peter what the presentation was about. I viewed the presentation as kind of the first draft. It reminded me of a term paper that I might have seen that had been in a PowerPoint, and it really hadn't been through the mill yet. And I think through the mill would be putting on the desk of any developer who might move into the Northeast area and say, okay, how much do you have to spend to do something like this? Those kind of things have to get done so that it makes something that someone views as viable. You know, they need reality to splash onto a proposal like that to see if it really works in terms of what's a developer going to spend to do something. That's all.
Okay, can we move on?
I would just completely agree with Jim. That is the point, and let that discussion. As you can see, our meeting was exciting. I would encourage you all to and be part of our discussion on the Fed. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Will. Let's go to Government Operations Committee. It'll be Dooley Kiefer as the vice chair.
Yes, thank you. You pulled Resolution B off the agenda.
I did.
So I'd like to introduce Resolution B, Document 5263, scheduling a special election in Legislative District Number 9, Town of Groton, Lansing District Number 8, and Dryden District Number 3.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. The reason I asked for that to come off was simply because I thought we ought to give it as much publicity as we can possibly give. This is something that doesn't happen very often in Tompkins County. I believe it's only the third time in the past, 10 or 12 years. It gives an opportunity for the people in District 9, which is all of Groton Town and Village, plus the northern part of Dryden and the extreme eastern part of the town of Lansing, gives them a chance to pick their own representative through an election. It's until they vote, there will not be a seat filled on this legislature, and so it's very important that this move right along. We've been told by our election commissioners that there has to be a certain number of days to allow them, with recent changes in election law, to get absentee ballots, military ballots, and other things out to those who need a chance to vote. But we'll be having an election in February under this resolution. The parties will move expeditiously under the time frame to select candidates, and if independents want to run, they would have to petition. And then I think it's important, since this election falls at an odd time in the middle of February, that people keep it in mind. Remember, there'll be an election out there, and get out to the polls and vote. So that's the reason I asked for this to be brought forward. Anything else? Ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And I have Resolution P, Document 5266, authorizing the continuation of salary for position above the salary range. Deputy County Attorney, I move that.
Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion? Ready to vote? It takes a short roll call.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
And I have one other resolution, Resolution Q, ID 5182, in support of providing interpretation of translation services to limited English proficient residents seeking or requiring, interpretation and translation services to limited English proficient residents seeking or requiring access to county programs, activities, services, and benefits. I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Peter Stein.
I just wonder, I gather we're required to do this, is that right? I mean, I wondered, this is going to take a lot of people to do this, to be able to give translation in all of the languages that there are in our county, and they have to be able to go to various places to do it. And I just wondered how much it's going to cost.
Joe, do you want to speak to that?
I'll try, and when I get into trouble, I'll ask Karen Bear to help me out. We are mandated to provide these services. For any service that involves any federal funds, we are mandated to provide these translation and interpretation services if people need them to access those services. And we've been delivering on that for some time. What we are now doing, with a lot of help from Karen and really at the encouragement of WDIC, is instead of having a departmental response to these mandates and requirements, we're developing a county response to these requirements. So instead of having departments that have different contracts with interpretation services and translation, we will have one county contract that people can buy from. We will have a common set of rules that we can follow. So it's really, this resolution tries to do a couple of things. It tries to inform the community and educate the community about services that are available to them. It also really incorporates this countywide approach to fulfilling this mandate, and it also indicates in this, to the extent that we can, we will go beyond our mandate. So there will be other services that may not have any federal dollars behind them, but this says it is appropriate, and it's in our value system to provide these translation and interpretation services to people who may find them helpful. What will the cost be? Because your question is about cost. We know what the cost has been over the past few years, and it is very small. So we think that the cost of providing services will be, we think, in the $4,000 to $5,000 range. And as a part of the budget you just passed, you provided that funding in our office to do that. Now, it could be that we will find, because we are trying to elevate people's awareness of the service, it could go beyond that, but we know what we know about our experience, and it's been a very small price to pay to provide the service.
Okay, I'm surprised, but it sounds to me like an overwhelming job, but it's good. No, it's a good thing to do.
It's an overwhelming job, but some county has to do it, so we're moving it ahead. Ready to vote on this one?
The one thing that isn't clear to me from the resolution title, it just says in support of providing. It doesn't really say we're reaffirming or continuing. And I hope people don't get the impression that this is something new for us.
Good point. Ready to vote? All those in favor? Those opposed? That's unanimous.
So I have a report now.
All right.
On the committee meeting, we first dealt with airport items. We okayed the release of the RFP for marketing services, and we okayed use of the airport land for the solar array, where the power generation will directly benefit the city. We expect the lifetime of these panels to be 20 to 30 years, at least that's what the county attorney said, and the rent we will receive as a county is still being negotiated, but he estimated it to be about 5 cents a kilowatt, half a cent a kilowatt hour. We withheld the appointment of Mike Hall to the Air Services Board, since Mike Hall is currently the interim airport manager, and further clarification is needed since there may be a conflict with the Air Service Board bylaws. He can certainly attend the meetings, but it's not clear he should also vote. So that was not on your long list of appointments tonight. Then we did Board of Election items. We okayed budget transfers to cover the cost of two countywide elections and accept grant money to keep the machines under warranty. And we set the date of the special election that you just voted on. Then we discussed the power of the legislature to to reduce or eliminate penalties or interest on real estate taxes. The finance director does not have that authority, but the legislature, in theory, has that authority, and the county attorney had drafted a reform for a requester to use. We discussed adding procedures to be followed in connection with that request, and we expect the county attorney to return next month with the form and the procedures, and Nate plans to present that to the legislature at the next meeting. We then had about a 45-minute discussion on the LEP resolution that just flew through. There was certainly concern about saying that we can afford all of this. There was discussion of the concept, could we add language to the extent practicable, but that does not pass muster with the federal law, so we didn't do that. There are many other things that I could talk about, but it's late, so I won't. But we spent a long time on it. And then we passed a bunch of standard year-end resolutions in addition to the date of the organizational meeting, which you saw tonight. We passed resolutions dealing with the apportionment of taxes for 2015, the correction of errors in minutes and reports, the designation of newspaper, the establishment of 2015 meeting dates, and recertifying a standard work day for elected and appointed officials. And then at the very end of the meeting, I had asked to have a little bit of time to bring up two new topics, which I want to just mention to you. One has to do with the legalization of sparklers in New York State. For several years, Governor Cuomo has vetoed what passed the legislature. This year, he signed it because it satisfactorily eliminated New York City from the resolution. And although the state says it's okay, we can't have sparklers in our county unless our municipality passes a local law saying we agree with this. So the county attorney has been asked to draft a local law for us to consider. And the other item I brought up had to do with whether we should consider designating or defining what legislative jobs really are. When I was elected to this entity, I was told that all I have to do is accept the salary. I don't have to do anything. And that has always seemed strange to me. In looking up something else, I found myself on the city website, and the city charter actually specifies some requirements for what common council members have to do. So I thought it would be interesting for us as a legislature to see if we are interested in doing that. It wasn't clear to me whether it should go to the GO committee or the Charter Review Committee. So it's out there. And for the Charter Review Committee, I will try to get a brief extract from the city charter to show you what we have to think about. That ends my report. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Will?
Julie, what is the impetus to allowing sparklers?
They're fun.
I can't disagree, but they also pose a real danger. And I'm wondering if that's been considered at all in terms of potential for burns and such, especially by young children.
It will be if we have a local law and put it to public test.
Yeah.
No, we didn't talk about it much.
Okay, thank you.
Duly following up on that, is it the county that has to decide, or can it be local municipalities, or can the county decide one way and the town of Lansing decide another way?
Apparently, any municipality can act in it however it wishes, so it could be a patchwork. I didn't draft the state legislation.
One of our state senators did. This comes from Senator Nozzolio.
Yeah.
Anything else for Dooley? Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chalk is our chair.
Yeah, no, I'm just sitting here picturing. I think that before we vote on this law about the sparklers, we should bring sparklers and turn down the lights and wave them around. The Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee met November 19th, the day after our last meeting, and thank you for making the TCAT appointment that we talked about. We spent a lot of the meeting on the draft comprehensive plan and the changes and public comment and the changes that staff was recommending to make to parts of that plan in response, and we'll be hearing more about that. We set a date for the public hearing. You can come back to us tonight because that's not until February. I assume that's going to come to us at one of our January meetings. We did pass a resolution.
You did. I'm not sure if it's coming at the next hearing. I'm not sure if it's coming at the next meeting or in January.
Yeah. Okay. And then we did have the presentation by Joe Sindico from Energize New York, and he really was everything that Joe promised and more. Very impressive guy. He had been the CFO of NYPA, the New York Power Authority. He had been, I didn't quite catch the title, one of the chair, director of New York State Development Corporation.
I think he was the COO.
COO of that. He had been a town supervisor from Bedford, New York, and on the town council before that. New York State, passed its version of the PACE law, the Property Assessed Claim Energy Program, and that basically the way New York State is going about this, it is it allowed an LDC, a loan development corporation, to set up a loan program. Initial funding is being put in at fairly minor amounts relatively by NYSERDA and DOE. The bulk of the money to make loans will come from the private sector, the Bank of America and Merrill Lynch are the big players, First Niagara Bank. And it'll put financing dollars into clean energy retrofits at rates that are positive, that are good in the market. They'll range, I think it was 3.75% to 6.something%. So that's competitive. And, we talked before about new construction. What can you do with new construction? I mean, he said that's the easy part. That's doable by developers who want to do that. The really tough nut to crack, according to this presentation, are the retrofits, energy retrofits and energy efficiency. If you're putting money into a new system, you can choose, and the differential in price between those air ducts, the air pump systems, and another system that you're going to pay off after over 20 or 30 years of a lifetime is not so big. But if you've got a heating system or a house that's really leaky or a building. So these are going to be mostly larger scale. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac don't let individual residences participate in a program like this, because what happens is the loan payment carries with your property tax bill. You don't make it directly to the bank. Basically, we would be in the role of collecting the payments. So this will provide long-term loans at competitive rates to commercial or not-for-profit entities. So these would include industrial and manufacturing entities that exist and want to upgrade their energy, but healthcare, hospitality, not individual housing, but multifamily housing, and I forget what the definition was, more than a certain unit, number of units, not-for-profit, office space, retail space. And our role would be to pass a law. So this would be a local law. We have to be willing to collect the payments. There are no fees for us to participate. The people taking the loans do pay a fee, which allows the staff to be there at the state level. And we have to be willing to collect the taxes, and we absorb some of the risk. The risk that we're absorbing is the loan needs to be repaid as a lump each year to this EIC, and it still needs to be repaid even if there are individual property owners who aren't paying us their property taxes. Pretty high standards for the loans, certain loan-to-value ratio. You have to be in good financial standing to get one of these at these lower interest rates. And then there's a fund that is set aside to backstop these. So we could be out the collection money and then have to apply to this fund if somebody doesn't pay. So that's what I remember from the presentation. The eligible measures. What did he say? Basically, anything that will take electricity or gas off the grid, lighting, insulation, air sealing, HVAC, chillers, controls, windows, pumps, solar PV, solar thermal, geothermal, wind. Anything that helps us get that energy usage down for these existing structures. There's more detail that I can give if people are interested about, what the loan terms are. But Joe, do you have things to add?
Just a couple of things, very short, on next steps. This is kind of groundbreaking stuff. So we want to make sure that we go into it with our eyes absolutely wide open. So a couple of the next steps that will happen, we're arranging a conference call with Energize and the city and county attorneys and the city and county finance directors. So they can really, penetrate, probe, make sure that everything is as we think it is. So we want it to pass their muster. I should say, too, right after peak, Joe Del Sindaco went to the city, had a committee meeting there, and got a very favorable response from the city as well. So we've agreed, again, to kind of combine efforts to have the lawyers call and the finance directors call. And then if it gets past that filter, it will come back to both legislative bodies for workshops to spend time to make sure we've thought of all of the trapdoors, ins and outs, details, and so forth that we need to know about this brand new groundbreaking program before the final step happens, which is that local law that Carol talked about, where we join the group. So there'll be a lot of opportunity to vet and to really understand the details of this before we jump into it, and that will happen next. We think we should be able to get this done within the next, let's say, 2 or 3 months.
We wouldn't be the first to join this group. The current members, are counties and towns down
Westchester
area, Orange County also. And they've been making presentations all over the state. Cities and counties, for the most part, towns are not eligible to do this. It's cities and counties, except for the city of New York. You have to have foreclosure ability to collect, and towns don't have that. They come to the city or the county, relevant county. So, but we wouldn't be the first. So anyway, that was that's what we did at our meeting.
Any questions for Carol? Carol, thank you. Charter Review Committee will meet tomorrow at 3:00 p.m. in this room, and we will be discussing the changes that will be needed for the Human Rights Department and also Board of Elections. Any questions? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. I have one resolution. It is Reso number R, budget appropriation and adjustment for 2013-2014 corrections retroactive wage increase, corrections officers unit, local 2062, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Discussion. Dooley?
In the title, after 2013-2014, the word...
Right.
The word corrections is redundant. It shouldn't be there. It's correct in the end, corrections officers unit. So I recommend that be struck.
No, it's corrections retroactive wage increases. It's the unit.
Well, then it should say Corrections Officers Unit Local 2062 retroactive wage increases. It's that I don't think you need corrections, the word in both places.
So what are you suggesting?
That the first one gets struck.
Strike it.
Is that friendly to the seconder? Who was second? Martha, is that friendly?
Yeah.
Okay. As amended, friendly amendment, are ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. I'm sorry, we need a short form roll call.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
I don't have anything else to report, and that would be the end of my report. Thank
Any
you.
Questions for Jim? Martha?
I'm just curious if the agreement we just voted on, the agreement with the officers was approved in August. Why does it take so long to get to this point? Just math?
Yes.
Okay. And you want to do it before the year ends.
Right.
So we can
and you
it
will
up.
Note that the agreement runs out in 30 days. So,
could I just add to make it clear? They're not awaiting their retroactive checks. Those checks have been issued. We're now moving money into the accounts to be able to cover those expenditures that were made earlier.
Yeah. In most cases, through the number of years I've been here, the people get their money as quickly as we can process it through payroll, and then we have to do this kind of a resolution. So, thank you for that.
Okay. So. Anything else? So we're going to finish up the agenda, and then we're going to go take a motion for executive session. Let's take the minutes of November 18th. Someone want to move those? Mike Sigler. Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? That's one opposed. Any unfinished business? I would ask for a resolution then to go into executive discussion for labor, to discuss labor negotiations. We will come back and adjourn, but we don't expect to take any action. Jim Dennis is moving
it. I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. All in favor of executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. We'll take a minute while we shut down.